Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week. We're here to run down the top news from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today.
I'm Andy Eubank. We'll also have Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's up-to-date Indiana farm forecast, and we'll review the week in the grain markets after Thursday's USDA supply and demand report.
And I'm CJ Miller. Coming up in the news, Purdue's College of Agriculture is celebrating quite a bit this weekend, not only with graduates crossing the stage, but also their updated U.S. and global rankings. President Biden addressed farmers from an Illinois farm earlier this week, and why Farm Bureau isn't happy with the first WOTUS roundtable.
All this, plus veteran farm broadcaster Gary Truitt's new feature called As I See It, where he shares one of his many opinions about agriculture today. We begin with the weather. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we sure hope you got a lot done this past week, because rain is sweeping through Indiana this weekend and next week. It's time now for the Seed Genetics Direct planting weather forecast with Hat Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. If you're looking for a robust lineup of corn or soybeans, both traded and conventional, and you want to increase your yield and your savings, contact Todd and Chris Jeffries at SeedGeneticsDirect.com. The best drying window we've seen in a while is closing, and Martin's upcoming forecast is a bit more active.
We're going to be finishing out the week and starting the weekend with above normal heat, but that heat does trigger some scattered showers and thunderstorms as soon as Saturday midday to early afternoon, and that moisture moves eastward. That sets off a period that is going to be featuring on-again, off-again showers all next week.
Saturday rain totals could reach anywhere from a few hundredths to 5 or 6 tenths across 80% of Indiana. And a second round of moisture looks to come in late Sunday and overnight.
Quarter inch or less coverage, more around at 25 to 30%, so that's a scale back. We go a couple of days without moisture, and then we're seeing another round of showers and storms Wednesday night through Thursday. They could be heavy in central Indiana before seeing a strong frontal boundary come through Friday into Saturday.
In Martin's extended forecast, there is some warmer air,
but moisture coming up from the south for early the week of the 22nd. I think we put together 3 to 4 dry days during that week with another system late week. That means, like I said, the best chance for drying that we've seen for a while is also the best chance of drying that we will be seeing over the next probably 2 to 3 weeks.
Martin's full planting weather forecast can be found at HoosierAgToday.com or in your inbox if you're subscribed to the Hat e-newsletter. It'll come each Saturday morning throughout the planting season. This forecast also presented by First Farmers Bank and Trust, proudly serving Hoosier farmers with agricultural financial services for over 135 years. With the wonderful weather we've seen this past week, we do anticipate a big bump in planting progress in USDA's Monday report, but it's not likely that many finished planting this week, and that's raising some questions. Here's Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. North Central Indiana pioneer agronomist Brian Early says they're already starting to get a lot of questions from growers about switching corn and soybean maturities.
Unfortunately, if you look across the last decade or two decades, we've had a lot of these wet springs where we get stuff in kind of late. So we actually have data to support that for both corn and soybeans, you shouldn't change up any maturities even into the first and possibly the second week of June.
When should we start thinking about different maturities?
The crop insurance date, or right before the crop insurance date, is a pretty good date. So, you know, when you're in extreme northern Indiana, maybe that date is June 5th. And as you move south, it'll creep later. So, yeah, that kind of that floating first week right there is when most people across the state need to really start having a discussion.
While the focus this week will be on corn and soybeans, Early says there is a renewed interest in taking care of Indiana wheat this year because it's worth so much and the acres are off.
Right now, if you look at wheat, it's fairly healthy, and it normally is in this when it's this stage. So we'll start to see some rust show up, some downy mildew and things like that on it. So, even though you don't see it right now, and when the flag leaves are starting to come out, you know, it would be pretty pertinent this year to scout and really think about planting an application on wheat. I tell you, we get pretty consistent payoff on fungicide on wheat, so it almost always pays its way.
Hear the full hat interview with Pioneer agronomist Brian Early at HoosierAgToday.com. The Environmental Protection Agency held the first of 10 stakeholder meetings regarding changes to the Water of the U.S. rule, and the nation's largest farmer organization is calling for more viewpoints in future roundtables. EPA's first WOTUS roundtable, Monday, didn't address farmers' need for clear rules, according to American Farm Bureau Federation's Courtney Briggs, Senior Director of Government Affairs, and she also questioned the panel's level of experience.
In theory, these meetings are designed to bring folks with different perspectives together to talk about regionally specific implementation concerns pertaining to WOTUS. And the list of participants for this first roundtable was diverse on paper, but we are very concerned about the lack of diversity of experience on the panel. And few of these participants have actually navigated the regulatory process associated with Clean Water Act compliance.
After round one, Briggs says Farm Bureau was disappointed in the results.
We were very disappointed. First, I think the credibility of this roundtable was hurt by the lack of any mainstream agricultural representatives at the meeting. Additionally, there was really no meaningful discussion of the law. So EPA can only make an informed decision if it seeks out and listens to all viewpoints. And we share the goal of clean water that was expressed by many of the participants, but farmers and ranchers need clear rules, and this roundtable failed to address how both of those goals could be achieved.
She says American Farm Bureau will stay engaged in the process with 9 of the 10 roundtables still to come. The next is May 23rd. The remaining meetings happen in June, and they are all live streamed. That schedule is available at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. Now we turn to the markets. Soybeans for a second day on Friday, a strong move after that USDA report Thursday, the supply and demand estimate update. Corn and wheat sold off just a touch on Friday to end the week on some profit-taking. We have numbers coming up. First, some market analysis with Bob Utterback at Utterback Marketing Services, talking about his reaction first to the report and where the markets are right now.
The report was, on balance, was not any major surprises other than it's now started the whole discussion of what if. And USDA did lower its yield expectation on corn from 181 down to 177. And that's one of the reasons why the corn was so strong Friday, Thursday, is you had a lot of analysts come out, okay, if we lose one bushel or two more bushels, carryover goes below a billion bushel. If we lose a bushel in beans, carryover goes below 200 million into the 150s. And that's now causing the end user to basically become very concerned about supply. And so right now, with the Ukrainian situation, we did address it, but not totally in the report, is now the end users are now becoming concerned that food shortages are going to become very much a fact over the next calendar year. And everybody is basically wanting to get control of that inventory. And that's why the front-end corn market, the DEES 22, rallied in reference to the DEES 23. It's why the front-end beans rallied over the back-end beans. And that's why hogs and cattle crash, but did bounce today because of the increase in input costs of feeding. So I think the market is putting premium in, but most guys that are listening to me right now are out in the planters. The planters are running very aggressively in the Midwest, trying to get crops in before this rain comes in Saturday and Sunday. But the market's looking beyond this rain and saying, okay, the area that's behind, which is the northern corn belt, we're talking North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, even parts of Michigan, they've had cool, wet conditions, and they've had some guys got some crops out, but they're still really behind.
Market analysis from Bob Utterback, Utterback Marketing Services, and Bob's number is 800-832-1488. Now, settlements, July corn Friday goes a dime and a quarter lower, 781 and a quarter. December contract, 748 and three quarters, losing 4 and a quarter. Beans up over 30 cents on July, 1646 and a half. The settlement, that's a 32 and three quarter cent gain. And November, 1498 and a quarter, up 17 and 7.75. July wheat came off today's low, still finished down a penny and a quarter at 11.77.5. And June live cattle, a 42-cent gain, 132.07. June lean hogs, $100.75, picking up 327. You're up to date now on the markets. I'm Ian DeEubank on Hoosier Ag This Week.
After a beautiful week of drying, our forecast gets a little bit more touch and go. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. Once again, we're concentrating very hard on planting potential. So right now, we do start with a little bit of moisture in our forecast for your Saturday. Sunshine early on in the day here, but I think by midday and this afternoon, we are going to be seeing scattered showers trying to work through. The initial wave of showers is not really all that impressive. A few hundreds to probably 4 or 5 tenths or so out of this first wave. It's more heat-based instability than anything else. Where things get real interesting is the second wave of moisture that wants to come through, and it is slated now for the overnight, tomorrow night, right on through early parts of Monday morning. There will be some thunderstorms in here, but it's still up in the air as to exactly who sees the thunderstorms that can give you 3/4 of an inch and who is on the fringes. My gut feeling right now is that the best thunderstorm potential comes across central Indiana, generally between US 24 and I-70. I tell you what, that's an awful narrow window to try and pinpoint right now. So I'm not going to be surprised at all if we get outside of that zone. But right now, we'll also put rainfall for that Sunday night into early Monday time period at a tenth to 3/4 of an inch. Everything's done by sunrise or shortly thereafter on Monday, and we'd get sunshine back for Monday afternoon. We are dry Tuesday, and then Wednesday is our next what could happen kind of thought process. Wednesday right now, we do see some moisture trying to cross the Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio areas, but it's focusing a little bit farther south. So we see this moisture coming across the southern 2/3 to 3/4 of Illinois, about the southern half of Indiana, and maybe only a good 20-25% of southern Ohio. But we do see a little bit of a longer tail into Thursday with hit and miss scattered showers behind this. So for Wednesday, Thursday combined, I think you need to leave the door open to anywhere from a 10th to 3/4 of an inch. Once again, coverage around 60-75% of the Hoosier state. Following that, we get another dry look at Friday. Overnight Friday night into Saturday, there's a frontal complex that tries to stall out a little bit farther to our north and west. If it stays to our north and west, we have a dry Saturday. If it comes down in, we have some rain. In any case, I think we're looking at rain and thunderstorms overnight Saturday night through Sunday, and that could give us anywhere from 0.5 to 1.5 inches. So that's the biggie. That's the one that it seems like is going to be most difficult to escape. So after a wide open, hot, dry, good drying week, now we transition into a period that it really comes down to A, how much rain you get out of any event, and B, how much time we get in between. Whether we can miss something or not, it's up in the air. I'm Ryan Martin.
Seed Genetics Direct is changing the seed industry by making it easier for farmers to increase their yields and their savings. When you work with Seed Genetics Direct, they tell you the price of your corn and soybean seed before you order it. They also put money back in your pocket with free delivery and aggressive discounts without complicated rebates or purchase minimums. So if you're looking for a robust lineup of corn or soybeans, both traded and conventional, contact Todd or Chris Jeffries at Seed Genetics Direct. Your wallet and your yield will thank you. Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. With another school year closing on Purdue University's campus, the College of Agriculture has much to celebrate. Dean Karen Plout spoke with Hoosier Ag Today at their annual Ag Alumni Fish Fry recently. She says the ag industry is growing in Indiana, and it's starting with Purdue.
I like to say we want to be known as the ag tech capital of the world. Indiana can do that because we have such a variety of industries. Purdue's really important, and one of the exciting rankings we just got, we follow the QS World Rankings for Agriculture and Forestry. We were number 7 in the U.S. We're now number 4 in the U.S. We were number 15 globally, and we're now number 8. So really excited. We are really a top 10 agricultural school in the world.
Plout says they're doing a lot of cutting-edge work on campus, and a lot of that is happening because of new facilities.
We did the Ag and Biological Engineering Building. We just dedicated that. Hopefully soon, although it probably won't be that soon, the Forestry and Natural Resources Building. We have a new animal science building. Lots of facilities that allow Indiana to thrive in terms of agriculture and allow our students to grow and get experiences.
And that doesn't even include the new veterinary medical hospital complex dedicated last month that isn't in the College of Agriculture but still contributes in a big way to the ag industry. Plout says all of these projects are able to happen because the folks at the Indiana State House recognize that agriculture is big business in Indiana.
Agriculture, if you include the ag biosciences, it's a $52 billion industry in the state. So it really is an economic driver for the state and an area that really Indiana can shine. We have cutting-edge farmers. We have Elanco and Corteva, both with headquarters here, so large animal production, large plant production companies right here in the state. So we are primed to continue to grow and make a difference for the state.
And there are other things to celebrate. Purdue's Agriculture and Biological Engineering graduate program is celebrating another year atop the U.S. News and World Report's rankings of best graduate schools, ranking number one in its category. The ABE graduate and undergraduate programs have consistently received top rankings over the last decade. The White House on Wednesday announced actions they believe will address the global food supply chain to make food more affordable while lowering costs for farmers. President Biden visited a farm in Kankakee, Illinois to speak to farmers.
The real reason I'm here is to thank American farmers. Thank farmers. You feed America. You got us through a pandemic. And you're literally the backbone of our country. It's not hyperbole. But you also feed the world. And we're seeing with Putin's war in Ukraine, you're like the backbone of freedom.
The actions announced include increasing the number of counties eligible for double cropping insurance, a move to increase U.S. production of crops. Biden also discussed fertilizer, saying farmers are worried about the rising costs and the content of fertilizer.
That's why earlier this year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it would invest $250 million to boost fertilizer production. Literally on the plane out here on Air Force One, I turned to Tom and I said, Tom, double that. Make it $500 million. It's so desperately needed. We can't take chances. It's critical to get this done.
Biden was referring to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, who joined him in Illinois Wednesday. Another measure announced aims to cut costs for farmers by increasing technical assistance for technology-driven precision agriculture and other nutrient management tools. Speaking of that food supply chain and the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the European Union is set to help Ukraine export millions of tons of grain currently stuck in the country. As part of that Russian invasion, their navy has blocked Ukraine's Black Sea ports, and Ukraine was the fourth largest grain exporter during the 2020-2021 season, selling 44.7 million tons abroad. You can read more on this at HoosierAgToday.com. A unique partnership was announced this week between beer and deer. Busch Light and John Deere announced a partnership to support farmers through their For the Farmers campaign. Special edition Busch Light cans will feature John Deere equipment. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Farm Rescue, a nonprofit that provides critical material aid to family farms. Dan Erdman of Farm Rescue says they're thankful for the promotion.
We're humbled, we're honored, and we're excited by the decision to choose Farm Rescue as the beneficiary of this kind of first time ever co-promotion here. It's not something that John Deere has done in the past, but two fantastic companies that have teamed up for this For the Farmers can promotion. Again, it's a special edition Busch Light can decked out in that John Deere green and yellow, and got the tractor on the front and the agriculture in the background.
John Deere joked on Twitter Tuesday to not call it a case of Busch Light for obvious reasons. So for each 24 or 30 pack of 12-ounce Busch Light sold during its limited run from now through July 3rd, Busch Light will donate $1 to Farm Rescue, up to a maximum of $100,000, with John Deere matching their donation. Erdman says the donation will be a big help.
It's going to make a huge impact on our efforts to support farm families going through crisis. And it also, it kind of thrusts us into more of a national spotlight and just lets folks know who we are and what we do, and hopefully connect us with more of those families that are going through a tough time. If it's injury, illness, or natural disaster, who could use a free hand up from Farm Rescue.
Read more on Farm Rescue at HoosierAgToday.com and get out, get yourself some Busch Light for a good time and a good cause.
This is Money Minute, tips from the experts at AgriFinancial, and we're continuing our conversation about financing a Morton building project. Joining me is Gene Charvel, Regional Sales Officer with AgriFinancial. Gene, we've talked about big farms and big building projects, but can you work with small or part-time farmers?
Our financing fits very well the small part-time farmer, and it's really not about acreage. We finance Morton buildings to part-time farmers who have very limited acreage.
Is there an income minimum with smaller operations?
Someone has to have only $1,000 of gross farm income. And so it doesn't take much of a farming operation to generate $1,000 of gross income. So again, if somebody's got even the smallest of operations relative to something agricultural, we can usually make that be a fit for our finance.
For more information on financing a Morton building project, visit cgb-agfi.com. This has been Money Minute from AgriFinancial.
Spring planting across the Hoosier State is underway, and motorists are more likely to encounter slow-moving farm equipment on Indiana's rural roads. I'm Bruce Kettler, Director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Hoosier Ag Today, several Indiana state agencies, and all of us at ISDA are teaming up to ask all motorists to keep an eye out for large farm equipment and avoid distracted driving. Be careful and patient when passing, and don't tailgate. Visit isda.in.gov. Farmers and motorists, let's look out for each other this spring.
Volatility and uncertainty, they're not new to farming, but in 2022, we've moved to a whole new level.
We've certainly had a very volatile market over the last 18 months.
So this situation is not going to go away fast.
We've seen some pretty active volatility in the spread.
In this environment, Indiana farm families need timely and comprehensive information. Hoosier Ag Today is your best source for timely, relevant, and credible coverage of Indiana agriculture. Rely on Hoosier Ag Today, heard daily on this station.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. Coming up, you'll hear which countries are spending more to buy U.S. beef. But first,
on the weekend show, this is As I See It with Hoosier Ag Today's Gary Truitt. Warning, what you're about to hear may be edgy and not suitable for the kids.
When I was ordering a pizza online the other day, a new menu category popped up called Conscientious Connoisseurs. This section contained all kinds of choices that the pizza place thought were sustainable and environmentally friendly. Most of these were plant-based, that is, non-real meat and dairy toppings. The pizza chain somehow felt that these were more sustainable and better for the environment than livestock or dairy farming. While the marketing people at food companies think this is going to be a big motivator for consumers, research suggests otherwise. A recent report from Purdue suggests that, in general, consumers don't give a hoot about food claims on sustainability and environmental impact. According to the latest Purdue Consumer Food Insights report, a monthly update identifying trends and changes in consumer food purchasing habits, sustainability and environmental impact ranked very low on what determines the food that people choose to eat and buy. But the survey suggests that most consumers don't care about sustainability or environmental claims made on food packages. There are persistent misconceptions when it comes to food sustainability and environmental impact, says Jason Lusk, Distinguished Professor of Agricultural Economics at Purdue. For example, he said most people believe that local foods are better for the environment and eating less meat is better for the environment. Yet scientific studies show there is little evidence that locally purchased foods benefit the environment and significant evidence that there is no negative impact from meat production. So if people aren't worried about the sustainability or environmental impact of the food choices they make, what are they worried about? GMOs? Animal welfare? Carbon footprints? No, none of the above. According to the Purdue survey, the top issue in the minds of consumers today is bird flu. 60% of consumers are concerned about the impact bird flu might have on chicken prices. Yet, here again, there's misconception involved. While the virus does pose a serious threat to livestock, supplies and prices have not been greatly impacted by avian flu. Yes, poultry prices have increased, but there are many factors causing the price rise, and bird flu is a very small part of it. The poultry industry and state and federal agencies have responded quickly. They have worked hard to contain the virus. While the media reports on millions of birds being euthanized, most people don't understand this still represents a small number of the chickens that are currently in production. So let's knock off the conscientious connoisseur BS and start focusing on being an informed connoisseur. Take a few minutes. Learn how foods are actually produced, what ones are sustainable, what ones really have an environmental impact, as well as what really is driving up food costs. That's how I see it. I'm Gary Truitt.
Thank you, Gary. The latest monthly export numbers show that U.S. beef continues to see growth. Aaron Borer, the Vice President for Economic Analysis at the U.S. Meat Export Federation, says beef reached a new value record in March with more than $1 billion of beef exports shipped.
That was on a value basis up by a third year on year. So for a little bit of context, we've seen those beef prices, including for the export items, accelerate from about April, May a year ago. So we're going to get into more challenging year-on-year comparisons, especially from the middle of this year. But yes, every month continues to be impressive, and it's exporting a larger share of production and pretty widespread growth.
Borer said that China, including Hong Kong, was up 36% again, and these continue to be big gainers.
Korea up 9% in the first quarter on volume. China, including Hong Kong, up 36% again. But then you have kind of widespread growth. Middle East is coming back in on both variety meats and muscle cut. Taiwan up 47%, a huge start into that market. And then in the islands, in the Caribbean and the Dominican Republic, we're seeing some food service coming back in there. They were up 41%. And Central America has been really strong on both beef and pork, and they continued to grow. So those beef volumes into Central America up 14%.
However, the market is still struggling with setbacks in China due to COVID.
We've maybe pulled back our growth for the entire year a bit, given the situation mostly in Shanghai, but in other cities, and then, of course, concerns about Beijing. The current situation, we can't really downplay its significance. Most of the U.S. beef had been going into that Shanghai port, and we know that moving products out of port and just trucking out of the region, plus some restrictions even on cold storages, especially if there's a COVID case, there's big challenges for moving product, not to mention demand impacts, you know, with restrictions on food service. But still, this can't last forever, and we know there's still the demand in that market.
You can read more about this story and all the latest Indiana farm news at our website at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, that does it for this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Have a great weekend. I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's leading farm network.